ICE seminar? What's this say? I can't read it.
Itch manners.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
And you're listening to Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions. Hello, my dove.
Hello, dear.
How are you?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's a house full of chaos. We're joined in the studio by special guest B.B. Lee McElroy. She's watching.
She's going to be a silence.
Yeah,
yes.
She's watching Daniel Tiger with her headphones on, and hopefully she'll be chill. And outside the studio, we have two special guests, Buttercup McElroy and Lily McElroy, who hopefully won't bark too much. It's just a house full of Saturday morning chaos. Sorry this episode's late, but you know, life. And we're doing it. And we're
living it.
We're living it. We're achieving it. And we're believing it. This is it. All coming together. Yes. Therese, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
How's your handwriting?
You know, I feel like my handwriting has suffered in the last few years.
Mm.
Whereas when I was diligently writing, you know, stuff, it was a lot better. So I'm going to say I'm out of practice, but I like my handwriting.
I, much like my manners, I have my everyday handwriting and my formal handwriting. And I've bragged about this on My Brother Me before, and I'll brag about it again. I could still write the whole alphabet in cursive, and
oh,
I'm pretty proud
exactly.
of that. 35, I'm just saying. But normally, and you've seen my handwriting, I write in all caps, print letters, usually with a Sharpie, because
yep.
I'm a very bold, dynamic, and loud human being.
It's true.
And it transfers to my writing. But,
You know what's interesting about my handwriting? It looks very much like my mother's, even though she is left-handed.
Oh. But did you learn, like, would your mom, like, write a letter and then hand you the pen? You told me the other day that you learned on a Magna Doodle.
Yes. I am terrible at spelling because I am a phonetic speller, but English is not a phonetic language.
No.
So in order to learn my spelling words, I would use a Magna Doodle. Mm. So I could just write the words over and over and over and over and train my hand how to write them.
See, so this is interesting, right? Because I feel like...
That's also how I used to learn my lines, too.
Oh, yeah? Writing them out?
Writing them out over again.
I'm one of those people that, like, really took to spelling. I'm pretty good at it when I'm thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, handwriting was something that took me forever and ever and ever. Maybe that's why I can still remember how to do it, because I had to really, like, drill it in. Because I remember thinking, like, this is dumb. Like, why do I need this? Because that's the thing. So our generation is a very transitional generation in a lot of ways. But one of those ways was... computers being used in schools.
Right.
Like, I remember, you know, in, like, fourth grade doing, like, Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing.
Oh, and that man,
hi, BB. BB just brought me my tennis shoes for some reason. Thank you, BB. Okay, great.
I was so bad at that. I think that's the only class I ever failed. D was failure.
Okay, listen, here's a little behind the scenes, and we'll get to talk about handwriting in a second, I promise. But for some reason, at our school... The computers had, like, two programs on them. Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing and Sims Hotel.
Oh, no.
Like, so whenever the teacher wasn't looking, I would just, like, alt-tab or over or whatever and play Sims Hotel until she walked back by, and I would switch it back real quick. I wasn't paying attention to Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing at all. And so still to this day, I hunt and peck type. But,
yeah.
So... Handwriting.
Handwriting.
I assume the history of handwriting goes back a good long way.
Indeed. So the Romans were among the first to develop a written script for things like transaction and correspondence.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think we maybe have talked about this before, but, like, famously, if I remember correctly, they, like, developed it to keep receipts of paying soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Because they had, I don't know if you know this, the Romans, pretty big army.
pretty big. And they borrowed sort of from a lot of different people's alphabets, mainly the Etruscans.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you're going to borrow, I mean, from the best, you know.
Exactly. So it's kind of interesting that in my experience, we learn printing before we learn cursive, because intuitively it should be the other way around. In fact, it was the way that historically speaking, you did cursive first.
Now, why you say that intuitive? Why?
Well, because the early versions of both lowercase letters and, you know, and numbers looked a lot more like cursive. Mm. So you can think about how historically it evolved that way.
I see.
Why would you teach it the other way? We'll continue. Anyway. So after the Roman Empire fell, penmanship became more of a specialized discipline.
Okay.
And it was primarily for the monks, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
because they were in charge of, like, copying things and making books and stuff. And I know that we tend to think of the Middle Ages as kind of this backwards time, but the demand for books really increased during the Middle Ages.
So as I understand it, and I have, at this point in my life, 35 years old, negative knowledge of history. Like, I have what my actual knowledge of history has been replaced by watching too many TV shows and books and stuff that I don't know what's true. And there are dragons, right? Anyways, but I would be willing to bet that a lot of the problem was lack of spreading of information.
Yes.
That it was like the people definitely. Who had books were the very, very rich.
And like, they had a lot of books.
Royalty and stuff. And there weren't like libraries and schools and stuff that everybody was going to.
I mean, basically the only place to get books was from monks. And if you weren't rich, you couldn't get them.
Yes.
But it varied, the style of handwriting, even spelling, really varied a lot by region. So in the late 8th century, Charlemagne tasked an English monk with standardizing it, right? So what they decided was, it was heavily influenced by Roman characters, but it's called Carolinian minuscule.
Okay.
And it was designed for maximum legibility and featured lowercase letters.
Maximum legibility. Sunday. Oh, watch these monks write in Carolinian minuscule. Maximum. You'll pay for the whole page, but you'll only use the first two lines. Sorry, go on. You were saying something?
It featured lowercase letters, word separation, and punctuation, which, again, because of the highly stylized nature, sometimes the words weren't even separated. You know what I mean?
This is something I remember, oddly, that has stuck in my mind from church, like, Bible study stuff and everything, that for a long time, monks, to conserve space, it would all just be, like, one whole line, you know, everything, all the letters, and then you would have to, like, go through and, like, put hash marks between each word.
Mm-hmm.
But like you would do that as the reader. Yeah. It's interesting to think about that sometimes these were not done with the idea of like that they would be read. It was just like we're writing this down for future posterity. This isn't like I'm writing a book to publish.
It wasn't about ease of readability.
Right. Yeah. This is like you're going to sit down and you're going to like pore over this and study it and stuff. This isn't like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to sit in a hammock and read this monk book.
So by the 1700s, elegant handwriting really became a status symbol. And this is when penmanship schools really started to flourish.
Now, let me ask you, flourish, huh? Good. Now, I have a question for you because this is one of the questions we got a lot when I put the call out, and in some form, people asked a lot, like, why is traditionally, like, good penmanship considered, like, feminine?
Well, I wouldn't say it's considered feminine. I would say that when penmanship was highly valued, there was a difference between what was considered feminine script and masculine script. So usually the masculine side was more kind of like heavier. It was, the loops were fatter, you know, kind of like taking up more space, whereas women's words were kind of more intricate and shaded. And so,
well, man, if that isn't just a great metaphor, huh?
So, like, when you looked at someone's handwriting, you were analyzing them for how much time it would take, right? Because if you were, say, a woman of leisure, you could go back over your handwriting and shade the things that were appropriate, right? That meant that you had a lot of time.
So, like, bold? Like, you can make them bold, right? You would,
well,
like, bold script?
Think about calligraphy. Like, where one side of the letter is darker and thicker.
Oh, right.
Than the other side. That going back and shading. Because you can do a little bit of that with a pen, right? You can make it a thin or a thick line.
Depending on pressure, yeah.
Right, but if you have to go back and make it even thicker, that shows that you have a lot of time on your hands.
Now, was it about bragging about how much time you had, or was it showing, like, this mattered to me, so I put time into it?
It was, at this time in history, it was more about social status.
Yeah.
And also, different professions had different writing styles.
Okay.
So if you were a lawyer, you would write one way. If you were a merchant, you would write another way. So it wasn't just about, you know, how much leisure time you had, but also what your job was.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then, at this point, so I've jumped all the way up to, like, colonial America.
I've heard of it. Yes, I'm familiar. Mm-hmm.
And
colonial
reading,
Williamsburg. Yes,
uh-huh,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Reading and writing were very heavily separated at this point. Reading was basically measured in, can you read the Bible out loud? Not can you understand what you've read, or does it, you know, does this read well? Does this make sense? Doesn't matter. Can you read the Bible out loud? Uh-huh. Yes. Then you're a good reader.
Ah, okay, cool.
Right? Same thing with writing. Can you make this word look like my word?
So it was more about, it was less about comprehension and more about just like duplication in both cases.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And penmanship was more like, when you think about the, quote, old masters artists, mm-hmm, right? And what would usually happen is you have an old master painting and you are charged with copying the old master, right?
Yeah.
So it was the same thing with handwriting. You were given a copybook, a workbook, and if you could duplicate what it looked like, you had good handwriting.
That's interesting because, like, it seems to make sense right up until I think about the idea of, like, if that's all you're doing, then, like, how tricky must it be if you are trying to write a word you've never seen before?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're trying to read a word you've never seen before, and you're like, okay, wait, give me a minute. You know what I mean? As opposed to learning how all the pieces fit together and why, mm-hmm, instead, mm-hmm, just learning, like, if you see this, it's this.
Yeah. Rote memorization.
Right.
Basically. So then, going back to the idea of different styles of penmanship, let's discuss print and cursive.
Yes, please.
So,
is it true that you have to write checks in cursive?
No.
Oh, but what about just the money part? See, BB agrees with me.
So these different hands were developed, and it's not just about print versus cursive, although it is kind of. So when you print something, it's harder to make them all connect, right? So it's kind of it's a blockier thing.
Bop, 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 bop. It's very staccato.
Yeah.
Staccato jazz.
That goes back to the pieces of type. in the printing press, right? And also this kind of monastic hand, the Gothic look, yes. Right?
The Tim Burton-esque writing.
Sure. And then the other hand would be the cursive, right? Which in its developing stage was known as the Italian or italic hand.
Whoa!
I know.
Now,
right?
See, you have made a point to me now that I've made a connection because of the thing you said, because you are very illuminating. That I've never thought about it before, but if you're good at it, because it all connects and everything, it's probably faster to write in cursive.
It is faster to write in cursive. That's why a lot of shorthands are based on cursive letters. And that is generally why people wrote in cursive anyway. Like, you're... The hand, and this is so hard because the name of the hand and the hand, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
A person's hand attached to their arm works faster when you don't have to lift up the pen.
That makes complete sense.
So the italic or Italian hand is faster because you're connecting the letters.
And let's be honest, folks, if you've ever written in cursive for a big one, you skip some letters. You know, you have those certain you have those letters
like the
where
M and the N that
they
are
connect
just
at the top, you know, like a P, you know how a P loops at the top, or like a U loops, or is it a V? Yeah, a V connects to the top. You would skip some letters in there, right? I'm just going to save it. And I'm reading it, I'm like, I get it, right? I get this. Where if you were doing it in print, I'd be like, you left out three letters. It's fine. I'm just saying, you could skip some letters.
So I want to talk about after the break, we'll be back with thank you notes. Cursive?
Teresa, we want to write a thank you note this week to ModCloth, but can you tell me a little bit about ModCloth?
Well, at ModCloth, there's no such thing as an ordinary outfit. They're crafted by a team of in-house designers. They have signature styles, which include hand-drawn prints and standout silhouettes in an inclusive size range.
That's nice.
Now, I love ModCloth because they have, on their website, they have a little drop-down menu, and you can go to vintage-inspired. I love those designs, and this spring and summer, florals are everywhere. I love the vintage inspired florals, the great stripes as well, and it all feels very, very fresh and still very old.
And stylistically interesting. That's yes. One of the things I really like about ModCloth is it's not cookie cutter. They're like bold, not just patterns, but also like different cuts and different styles to mm-hmm. match a lot of different like personalities. You know, sometimes like you go to a website and you're like, this is the same shirt, just in like a different print. And you know what? If you're into that, that's fine. But if you're like, well, I need to like hunt through, you know, thrift shops and vintage stores in order to find what I really want, maybe try ModCloth.
Yeah.
You know, maybe see if they've got what you need.
And if you are not sample size, this is a great place to go because they're expanding their size range from 00 all the way up to 28.
Wow. Well, there you go. So to get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com. That's modcloth.com and enter the code Schmanners at checkout. This offer is valid for one-time use only and expires on August 3rd, 2019. So go to modcloth.com and enter the code Schmanners at checkout. Go!
Hey, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors.
We took the identifying marks off this podcast. Just tell me your impressions.
It's really sexy.
My first thought is like Radiolab?
Definitely something popular.
Yeah, really popular. A hit show.
But funny, too. Like, does Tina Fey have a podcast?
Or the Marx Brothers?
Yeah, is this podcast Radiolab, but hosted by the Marx Brothers?
And sexy, like Sade? It reminds me of Sade.
Exactly. And they're all riding in a BMW.
Close. But not quite. Take a look behind these panels. And then watch this rocket blast off into space.
Whoa.
Ooh. And there's the pies we made you.
Oh.
Now, let's show you the podcast.
Wow, it was Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
Hold on.
Whoa. Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
That was 514 J.D. Power & Associates Podcasting Awards.
That was really scary.
But compelling.
I guess I should definitely subscribe to Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. A real podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to the live wrestling spectacular in Los Angeles.
So far, the world's most boring wrestling podcast has been destroying the competition.
Isn't there anyone who can save us from this travesty?
Wait, could it be?
It's Tights and Fights, the perfect wrestling podcast.
Tights and Fights is here to save us from the monotony of boring wrestling podcasts with hilarious conversations.
Woke trips through the history of wrestling.
And joke about the finer points of people wearing spandex.
What a match!
And the Tights and Fights podcast will be back every week.
Thursdays on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts. Please, these hosts have families.
Tights and Fights podcast. Tights and Fights.
Okay, we have a ton of questions, but first, you wanted to talk a little bit about thank you notes. Do they have to be in cursive? Can I print them? What about letters in general? Can I print them? Is it different if I type out a letter and print it on a computer versus handwrite it? Teresa, what?
Okay. Let's start with the thing I'm absolutely certain of. Even if you type a thank you note, you should sign your name with pen.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Now, the other arguments, one way or the other, have different merits, okay? I mean, you said earlier that it does show a certain care, certain attention to see someone write out in, you know, their own hand the thank you note.
Right.
On the other hand,
you just made yourself laugh and then made yourself really laugh, and I appreciate you a lot.
If you are illegibly writing, what's the point?
Right.
So maybe you need to type it. I do say that two or three sentences handwritten is enough.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to type, perhaps you should try and make it a little longer, a little more involved, a little more personal. Because
To balance it out.
Right. So maybe not just the standard two or three lines, should be a little more, you know, informative of or even like more like correspondence. Mm.
So what about if I'm handwriting the letter or the note or whatever? Does it have to be like fancy or cursive or whatever? Can I write in my all caps, print kind of handwriting?
If the alternative is illegible, write in your all caps printed business.
This is my feeling about it, right? And this is me, Travis McCroy, not an etiquette expert, but I would say write in your handwriting. Like, my handwriting is all caps print letters, right? If you get a note from me, that's what it looks like. And so to decide to try to write in cursive because that what feels like it's I'm supposed to, it feels weird. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, yeah.
I'm going to write in my form.
Okay.
Okay. Now, shall we do some questions?
Certainly.
Yes, let's do it. This is from KB's. I've always been super curious about handwriting analysis, the kind where folks claim to be able to determine someone's personality from handwriting, not the forensic kind. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it really is a very pseudoscience.
Yeah, it's more of a for fun.
Yeah, it's definitely up to interpretation. But there are perhaps some things that can be gleaned.
Like if you put a heart over your eyes, you know, that's a clear and obvious symbol, you know, like, oh, that's nice, you know. Although I could see a very creepy circumstance, like if a serial killer dotted the I's with hearts, then it maybe wouldn't be so nice. But you know what? That's off topic.
It's thought that more outgoing people tend to write in large, dark letters, whereas more shy, introverted people tend to write smaller, I suppose, unless you have a lot to say, right? That makes sense. Same thing about spacing. People who leave larger spaces between words are thought to be more independent than people that crowd them together. Maybe it's kind of if you crowd your words together, it's saying about you, don't look at me, like this is unimportant.
I don't know. Or it's saying like, I'm going to crowd my letters together, just like I'd like to be crowded together with people. Maybe. As opposed to saying, like, I'm going to make each word stand out, just like I like to stand out.
Same thing with heavy and light pressure. It might appear that if you have heavy pressure, it is something that you feel strongly about.
Or you just have big, heavy ham hands like I do.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe. Whereas, that suggests maybe anger or tension or just a big feeling, right? Whereas soft pressure might mean that you're feeling sensitive or treading lightly about the subject.
Sure.
You talked about dotting your I's.
Uh-huh.
The site that I looked at, and there are lots of these, by the way. It's almost like dream analysis.
Or you like can... we talked in the flower episode about like what different flowers mean. It's like, whatever.
Who's saying it is really what it means. If you dot your I's closely to the actual stick of the I, it might mean that you're an organized and detail-oriented person.
You're like, bah, 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 bah,
whereas if they are further away from the I, even over another letter, that might mean that you are kind of more playful or you are... your brain is thinking faster, or even that you're a procrastinator because you wait until you're done with the word to dot it.
You know, what's really interesting is like, if you think about the phrase, you know, I'm going to dot my I's and cross my T's, right? And make sure everything's done. That phrase really only makes sense if you know that cursive exists, right? Because the idea is that you connect it all together, you finish the word or you finish the sentence or you finish the document, then you go back through and dot. Because if the whole idea is like you don't lift the writing utensil to write the whole word, right? Then to cross T's and dot I's, you have to like go back and do it.
Yeah.
And so that's why you would go back and make sure you've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's once you were done. Anyways, it's not important. Okay, another.
But it makes sense.
Yes, another question. This is from Mike. What's your stance on how legible a signature should be? A friend who worked at a bank was told to make hers illegible because it's more secure somehow. Are there different rules for famous people who sign autographs? Now, here's the thing, Mike. If you want to get pedantic, there is a difference between your signature and your autograph.
Yes.
Right? A signature is like, would be your like legally binding. This is, and I almost said like a fingerprint, even though now forensics knows that fingerprints aren't as individual as we once believed. But anyways, there's like your signature is like your script fingerprint of like, this is my signature. And an autograph is, to your point, something that someone can wibble boop and be done quickly, so that if they were like doing a meet and greet signing, they're not having to write their name out each time. That said, I think a lot of people use those words interchangeably. And I think in modern speech that's totally fine. I think a signature should be more legible than an autograph, right? Just inherently so. But you know, we talked about this, like why does a signature exist and why do we write it in script? I think it's
because it's the thing that you write most often with a pen. And so you would use cursive or script because it's faster.
It's faster. And I think it also is more individual, right? Like the way that you shape a like print T, it's pretty straightforward. You know what I mean? But I think people's if you're looking at like comparing it to a different signature, right? script, I think, is a lot easier to identify as individual versus print. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it has to be like super legible. I think as long as it's the same every time, that's really all that matters. This question is from Ian. Why do doctors have awful handwriting, especially on prescriptions? Now, we reached out to Dr. Sydney McRoy, our sister-in-law, because I had a suspicion, but I wanted it to, so this is her quote.
You wanted your suspicion corroborated.
Yeah, this is correct. I wanted to be proven right because I'm me. Primarily, this is from Sydney. Primarily, it's the amount of writing that we have to do relative to the time. The saying is, if you didn't document it, it didn't happen. So we try to write down everything we can, and that leads to sloppy notes. A secondary factor is probably that sloppy handwriting can cover spelling mistakes, and some medical jargon is hard to spell. There's a trade secret for you. Thank you, Sydney. That makes a lot of sense, Ian, especially when you say, especially for prescriptions.
Yeah.
Like, the spelling of a lot of drugs is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably if you can get the point across, right, without having to remember exactly how it spells, like, it saves you having to look stuff up every time, right? Because,
Sure. Yeah,
that's my bet. It's not my bet, Sydney told us. let's see. This is from Luddles. How do you politely tell somebody you can't read their handwriting and you'd like clarification on what something says? I can't ever seem to find a way to phrase it that doesn't sound like I'm criticizing them.
Oh, boy. I think you're just going to have to let go of that idea of criticism, because it is not rude to ask for what you need. And as long as you don't start it with your handwriting is terrible,
right? I think, you know, like
it's not criticism. You need clarification. All you have to do is say, can you clarify this word for me?
And I think, you know, we've talked before about I statements. I think say like, I'm sorry, I can't read this.
You don't even have to say I'm sorry.
Or I can't read this, or I can't quite make it out. Like that's the thing, is like, there's always, you know, social contracts, we all understand. You know, I guarantee you, if someone's handwriting is illegible, they probably know about it by now.
Yeah.
And so if you say, like, I can't quite make this out, I guarantee it's not the first time they've heard it. You know what I mean? I think it's one of those things. That's like saying, like, if somebody said something and you didn't understand what they said.
Exactly.
Would you feel bad saying, like, I'm sorry, could you repeat that? No. You didn't hear what they said.
As long as you didn't say, you're terrible at speaking.
Yeah, you're mumbling. I need you to say it again. Speak up. Say, like, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. If you say, like, I'm sorry, I can't quite make it out. Right? You know, Yeah. Like, it's fine. It's fine. Moonsoother asks, is it uncouth to write in all caps? And let me answer that for you. No. It shows a refined palate, a discerning taste.
You often will even make the first letter bigger.
Yeah.
And make the smaller, like, they're still capital letters, but they're lower.
I have smaller. What I'm always picturing is, like, at the beginning of, like what I think about, like, with Canterbury Tales or, like, Robin Hood or whatever, where you have the one, like, almost, like, stained glass capital letter at the beginning of the chapter, right? And then you go into, like, smaller capital letters. That's what I always picture when I do it.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, the beginning of Sword in the Stone, too. Anyways.
A lot of those early Disney movies opened with words on a page.
Like storybook stuff. But, here's the thing. If that's what it takes for it to be legible, I think the only time I would be cautious about it is if you are writing a note that is, I don't want to say angry, but maybe not happy, that then how you write it might convey a tone that you don't necessarily mean, right? That's the only time that I would worry about it. But if I'm writing a thank you note and it's like, oh man, this is amazing, I'm not worried about writing in all caps. But if I was, like, you know, leaving a note on someone's windshield or something, I don't know, then I might think about how my all caps would come across if somebody read it out loud.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little bit of personality.
Yeah.
Gleaning, as we talked about that pseudoscience.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, someone might, no pun intended, read into it, but, like, that's, you know.
So many great puns this episode.
I know. It's almost like there's a lot of words to describe writing. So let me ask you this, Teresa Murray. And this is, we're all wrapped up with questions and stuff, but this is more prediction. Do you think that as, like, everybody has a tiny computer in their pocket and, like, digital correspondence becomes more and more prevalent, do you think that things like cursive writing and, like, I already think handwriting is not really taught in schools the same way it was when we were in school. Do you think eventually, like, handwriting will be a lost art?
I think that it will probably go out of style in the way of, like, we don't use typewriters hardly anymore, but we use a computer processor. But I do think that as long as we continue to try and express our individuality, it's going to be an art form.
That's fair.
There are actually, I saw, you know, because when you look up this kind of stuff, there's a lot of debate out there. Should we teach cursive? Should we only teach print? Like, why are schools getting rid of cursive teaching? Things like that. The new wave, as far as education goes, is to teach cursive first. Because, like I said before, it probably came first. It's a little more intuitive. It's easier because every, at least lowercase letter, starts at the same point on the line. Whereas with printing, you have to start, I think I read something like there are 7 different start points. So just like the rote memorization that it takes to learn the letters is a lot easier because they all start the same and end the same, I think, because they end at the bottom line too. So do I think that it will ever completely disappear? No. Do I think that it will move to a different place in our life? Yes.
It's especially interesting if you consider, like, if you look at the way, like, computers and devices have evolved, that we're kind of back to tablets now, much like how kids used to learn on, like, chalkboard tablets.
Yeah.
And now we have, like, computer tablets that you can use a stylus to, like, handwrite on. It's really interesting the way it's all kind of cycled back to tablet.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us. Thank you for joining us. BB, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you enjoyed Daniel Tiger. Buttercup and Lily, thank you for scratching at the door. We really appreciate you. And you know what?
Everybody just wants to be close to us, darling.
Listen, I get it. Yes, Lily, we hear you. So we're going to wrap up. But before we do, we want to remind you this week, my brother, and me, and the Adventure Zone are coming to Nashville, Tennessee, and Indianapolis, Indiana. And Schmanners and Sawbones are going to be opening for my brother, and me in Indianapolis and Nashville. So if you want to get those tickets, go to McElroy.family and click on tours. While you're there, if you're a fan of the Adventure Zone, you can get your tickets for our graphic novel book tour coming in mid-July. We're coming to Portland, Los Angeles. BB found her binoculars and she wants to wear them. We're going to be in Austin. We're going to be in New York and we're going to be in San Diego. Go get those tickets. The price of the ticket includes a free copy of the graphic novel. And if you're not going to be able to make it to those, you can go to theadventurezonecomic.com and pre-order. Go to...
Oh my gosh, things are devolving so fast.
No, it's all melting. MaximumFun.org, check out all the other amazing shows. MacroyMerch.com, check out all the great Macroy merch. What else, Teresa? What am I forgetting?
Thank you to Brent Brentelfloss Black for writing our theme music. It's available as a ringtone where those are found. Thank you to Kayla M. Wassel for our Twitter thumbnail art. You can tweet at us at SchmannersCast. No, don't touch the microphone, honey. And then thank you to Keely Weiss Photography for the cover banner of the
all BB wants to do is hit the microphone.
The fan run Facebook group.
BB.
Schmanners fanners, which you should join if you want to give and get excellent advice. Please submit your topic request.
It's all melting. BB, do you want to say hi?
Yeah.
Say hi.
Hi.
Hi, BB.
Please submit your topic request to schmannerscast@gmail.com.
Okay. BB, you want to say bye? Say bye to everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. All right, that's going to do it for us. Join us again next week.
No RSVP required.
Manners, schmanners.
Get it?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.